Thank you for having me here this evening. I have a bit of a cold, so I may be taking my tissue out of my sleeve a lot. I'll try not to. And I share my story quite regularly and a lot. And as you hear it, I think you're probably here. There's quite a lot of pain with it. And while I am very used to sharing it, at some point normally during it, and at some point that normally surprises me, it does hit me again. So if I get a little emotional, I will be fine. I will make it through, but just to prepare you for that. So just allow me with that, and I will keep going. So my name's Lindsay. I am married to Gavin, who you can see in the photo there. And we have a little boy called Reuben. Reuben is 5, and he just started primary school there in September. And Reuben was born on the 13th of September 2013, and on that day my life and our life changed forever. The world as I knew it was never going to be the same again. That's not a unique statement, especially for a new mum or a new parent to make. If you're a parent or a mum here yourself this evening, you can probably relate to that. The birth of a child, especially I think a first child, changes everything. New roles, new routines, new relationships and responsibilities fall into your life in very quick succession. And for me and for us, for Gavin and I, that was no different. But into my life also came a darkness and a despair unlike anything I had ever experienced before. And that was only to grow and to take on a life of its own for the next 2 years. And finally, in 2015, 2 years after little Reuben was born, I was diagnosed with maternal depression and anxiety, a mental illness that I had only really become aware of a few weeks before being diagnosed, but an illness that had taken root in my life, I have now learned, when I was pregnant. Because pregnancy for us wasn't particularly straightforward. I had no visible baby bump for most of my pregnancy. Even at 6 months pregnant, which I am in that purple dress that I am wearing on the screen, I was still wearing most of my pre-pregnancy clothes. And everybody I met looked twice at me when I said that I was expecting a baby. And statements of disbelief like, "No way." Are you like, "Sure? Like, really sure you're pregnant? Or do you think there might be, you know, something wrong?" became a constant, almost a daily reality for me. And we had lots of things going on during that, and we became accustomed to a certain amount of everyday stress, I guess, and anxiety caused by emergency appointments, weekly growth scans for Reuben, with no real assurance from anyone during that time and through all of those appointments and those emergency situations that everything was okay and that our baby was okay and that our baby was going to be okay. And so pregnancy became a time of anxiety, a time of feeling very embarrassed by my figure or lack of, a time of little joy or excitement. And eventually it began to feel unreal. At times, as strange as I know it might sound, I secretly wondered if and how I could be carrying a baby at all. And with hindsight, and with learning and understanding and help to look back and to see where I was, the beginning of mental illness, antenatal depression and anxiety, is very clear and was evident in my life at this point. Reuben was born breech, so he was born by C-section, and there you can see us there. And when he appeared over the blue curtains, as I lay on the operating table, when he appeared over the blue curtain, I saw a tiny baby, a crying baby, a bit of a messy baby, and I thought, that's not my baby. That can't be my baby. Sure, I haven't even had a baby. And as hard as that might be to hear, I cannot begin to explain just how hard that was to feel. And I also can't really explain what it did within my heart, within my mind, and within my soul. The sheer agony of that brought fear into my life in a way that I had never, ever known before. And such was that fear and such was that feeling that I checked myself out of hospital 24 hours after the C-section, and I walked the short journey home. I should say we lived about 5 minutes from the hospital, but it took us about 10 that evening. But I was determined that I needed to be in familiar surroundings. But I was utterly terrified. The world and life seemed to be happening and going on around me, but I felt completely detached from it, from my husband, from myself, and from my little son. And I had no reference points for how I was feeling or how I was not feeling, because none of the baby books that I'd devoured or the apps that I'd been on had mentioned anything like this. Or, to be fair, if they had maybe touched on it in some small way, the information just hadn't connected with me or impressed on me that this was somehow normal or that there was somehow a name for what I might be feeling or what I might be going through. And so on our first night at home, as my mum and my dad were there with my husband, I sat on our sofa chatting, and I had to resist the urge to hand my baby over to my mum to walk out the door and never, ever come back. And I have never experienced that fight or flight sensation in such a way as I sat on the sofa that night, and I can still remember it as I pushed my bum right back into the cushion, determined that I wasn't going to get up as my legs desperately wanted me to do and head for the door. And rightly so, as you listen, you're probably wondering, well, why did you not just say something? Why did you not talk to somebody? Why didn't you ask for help? And the truth of the matter is I did. I asked two different healthcare professionals when Reuben was between the ages of about 2 months and 4 months, and both of the reactions weren't helpful, and they didn't get me anywhere. Unfortunately, that led me further down the path of the illness, because I began to assume that, oh, this is just me, that this, all that was happening was somehow my fault, that there was something maybe internally flawed about me that meant that I just couldn't be a mum. In fact, I used to muse with myself or kind of joke with myself that, Lindsay, you just missed the mum gene. And so for the first 2 years of little Reuben's life, what was meant to be an amazing time and space to enjoy my baby became all about daily survival. And that made me very ill, mentally, emotionally, and eventually physically. And the truth is, the pain and the heartache of mental illness took me to the edge of a cliff, because I wanted to give up on life altogether. And I don't say that lightly or flippantly or for a reaction. Quite simply, I got to the point where I lost all hope that life could ever be good again. And during the final months, just before diagnosis, when it became clear to all around me, so to my husband and to my mum, that something was wrong, but not the what of the something, life got so difficult that I used to often beg my husband to lock me in a room and never, ever come back for me. And even as I say that, and I say it quite often, as you can imagine, I can still remember the pain on Gavin's face, the shock and the terror of what has happened. How have we got to this point? And over those 2 years, from that first night in the house, I honestly, on many, many occasions, considered packing my bags and never returning. And on all of those occasions, I had no idea where I was going to go, but I firmly believed anywhere would be better than where I was. It was finally in time for Reuben's second birthday. That's just us preparing for his little party. That I was diagnosed by a GP with maternal depression and anxiety, which began in pregnancy. At that appointment, I started on antidepressants and anti-anxiety medication, which I was on for a significant period of time. I had weekly appointments and support from a community mental health team. I started talking therapy of all different sorts, and I slowly began a journey of recovery. And during that recovery, Have You Seen That Girl was born. And it's a website, a blog, and a movement. But before I tell you anything about that work that I do, I wanted to unpack with you a little bit tonight what it was like to almost lose all hope and the impact that that had on my spiritual life, the impact it had on my belief in God and my trust in God and my faith that God is good and that God is for me. So I came to faith to have a relationship with God when I was about 22. And it was in response to a bit of life upheaval. A significant relationship that I'd been in for a long time very suddenly came to an end. And I ended up feeling quite lost, abandoned, alone, and heartbroken. And I was brought up in church as a young child and as a teenager. But like many teenagers, really struggled with it and really struggled to connect. And at this point of my life, I was nowhere near church. I wasn't going. And coming to faith was very simple. In remembering some of what I had learned in my younger days, I simply said to God, if there is anything that you can do with my life, then it's yours. But I need you to help me. And God did. And from that very simple prayer, God came to my life, invaded my life, and we began a relationship. I came to understand more of what it means to know him, to love him, to follow him, to be loved by him, and to serve him. It's fair to say that that relationship has had its ups and downs, like any relationship has. And without going into details, over the following years, my faith in God was tested and tried on a number of occasions, probably like some of you in here could testify to as well. But in each of those seasons, as hard as they might have been, it felt like I came out the other side with my faith stronger, more mature, or more certain than perhaps than when I had gone into them. That is until mental illness entered my life and the impact that this season had on my faith and my relationship with God is like nothing I was ever prepared for, or so it seemed at the time. You heard me say a minute or two ago that the pain and the heartache and literally the devastation caused by mental illness took me to the point of a cliff, and that I wanted to give up on life altogether, and that I lost all hope that life could ever be good again. The Bible says that hope deferred makes the heart sick. Well, maternal mental illness made me mentally ill, and that was very evident in my physical and my emotional and my mental well-being. But almost losing all hope had the biggest impact on my spiritual life, and that furthered the hold the illness had on me, because my heart was literally sick because of it. Everyday life felt very hopeless. I woke in the morning and I simply willed myself to survive to the end of the day, to make it to bedtime just one more time. And the reasons that I felt hopeless were many, but I thought I'd share a few of them with you here tonight. During the illness, I lost myself. I forgot who I was. I forgot what I liked and what I didn't like. I forgot what I believed. I forgot what was really important to me. And I actually became a shell of a person. It actually felt like my identity was gone, and I just didn't know how to get it back. The name Have You Seen That Girl, that the work I now do comes from, is the lyrics of an American country song. So yes, I am an American country music fan. You know, cowboy hat, yee-haw, all that sort of thing. But it's a song by a woman called Leanne Womack. And the lyrics say, have you seen that girl that everybody says I used to be. Have you seen that girl? Where along the way did I lose me? Have you seen that girl? Because I remember almost every day looking in the mirror, staring at a face that I just did not recognize. In fact, looking at somebody that I didn't actually like, having no idea where me had gone or how to get her back. And that was very frightening. I was lost, I was trapped, and I had no exit route. But I also felt very hopeless because I was filled with blame and with shame, because the only way that I could understand what was wrong with me was to believe that this was my fault. That I said earlier, to tell myself that maybe I just missed the mum gene. And you know, I was also hugely ashamed for how I was feeling. I was terrified about what it said about me as a mum or what it said about me as a person. And I suppose blame and shame nearly took on voices in my head. And these voices hounded me every day. And they'd say sort of things like, you know, Lindsay, you really are a useless waste of space. You don't measure up to any other mum around you. Or, this is the most defining moment of your life, Lindsay, and you have absolutely blown it. You'll never get this chance back again. You'll live in the shadow of this for all of your life and for all of Reuben's life. Or, everybody deserves better than what you can give them. Or, you must never, ever let anybody know this is how you feel. They'll not want to know you. And you know, those voices for those 2 years were the loudest, the boldest, and the most convincing unwanted companion in my life. And they allowed blame and shame to eat away at me, destroying my hope, determined to destroy me. And as well as that, I was also filled with fear. In fact, I would probably go as far to say that fear ruled my life. I was terrified of other people, particularly other people finding out that I maybe wasn't coping or that things weren't going as well as they should or they could. I was afraid of myself. I was afraid of Reuben. I was afraid of the future. I was afraid of my friends. I even got to the point where I literally could not leave the house. I didn't ever join any of the baby groups or activities that many new mums do with their little ones. In fact, the first time I was ever in a coffee shop, although I think coffee shop's a very nice term for it was actually McDonald's, but the first time I was ever alone somewhere like that with Reuben was when he was 2.5, and that was part of my recovery and part of me challenging myself to step out and do something that I just thought I couldn't do. And I'm pretty sure I had a tea and he had an ice cream, and I felt on top of the world as we left McDonald's, and I felt like I had accomplished something that felt like it would never be possible. Because you see, during that time, we spent our day in a very strict routine. We ate at a certain time, Reuben napped at a certain time, we played at a certain time, we walked twice a day, the same route, the same way, and staying and sticking to that routine was the only way I could keep on top of the fear that literally controlled my life. I lived in what I would say a state of high alert, always expecting and anticipating that the worst or something was going to happen, and what that worst or something could be changed every day. But I think probably I felt the most hopeless in all of this because I just felt like I could not find God. Never in the 10 years previous to this had I ever been in this position before. Because in those difficult situations, maybe as hard as they were, God had been my hope. He was what I held on to. He was what I clung to. He was who I trusted to bring me through. And this season felt very different. I felt detached from myself, but I also felt completely detached from him. And most of the time, when I tried to reach out, I just felt that I could not connect. Before giving birth to Reuben, before becoming a mum, I had spent the previous 10 years working in full-time ministry, for a couple of churches in Northern Ireland and one in England. And in those 2 years at home with Reuben, all of that felt like a distant memory, a different person. And as I lived through the illness, I began to question God. I began to wonder and worried if maybe he'd abandoned me. Maybe he'd forgotten about me. Maybe, even worse, he was disappointed in me, or he was punishing me. And the illness meant that my once very active faith also felt lost to me. I used to love reading the Bible, listening to podcasts, journaling, and taking time. And I spent a lot of spare time running after spiritual things. And suddenly, none of these were anywhere to be found. And not just because the rhythm of life had changed, because most new mums will say that there's not time to do all the things that they used to do before. So it wasn't just that. It was because I could find either little desire or little comfort in doing so. Because at times, to be honest, due to the illness, I couldn't even manage to sit still on the sofa to watch an episode of Location, 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 still one of my firm favourites. Never mind sit down on the sofa or in a quiet corner to try and read or to contemplate or hear what God might be saying to me. And I suppose all of that added to this sense of losing me. I just had lost all concept of who I was and what I enjoyed. And church made me feel, and still, to be honest, sometimes it makes me feel overly emotional from the moment I walk through the doors. There are some weeks still, it's all I can do to hold back the tears as the band plays the first chord, or as the first prayer begins, or as the Bible is read, or the sermon begins. And I don't mean a little, you know, dry my eye tear. I mean bawling tears. I mean the kind of tears where you can't catch your breath, where the snot is coming out of your nose, and you literally want to crawl up on the floor. There are still many Sundays which I need to take myself out for a minute or two to manage to contain myself. And particularly when I was ill, church was just somewhere I could not manage to be. And that was very hard, because up until then, church had been my community, my friendship circle, somewhere I found comfort and support. And all of that was gone, because Sunday was now a day that I dreaded, where I needed to manage, cope, and be on show. It felt like in my faith life, all that I knew of God to be true was a distant memory. And it was just something that I couldn't connect myself to anymore. And, you know, I also spent a lot of time angry at my faith and angry at myself. I was so disappointed that the faith that I thought that I adored, the faith that I had said many a time that I reckoned I would die for, somehow in this period of time seemed to have died within me, and I didn't know what to do about it. And yet, in spite of all this that was going on, I was regularly still crying out to God, sometimes audibly and through many tears, sometimes maybe shouting or screaming while Reuben was napping or while we were out for a walk with the buggy, and sometimes silently in sheer brokenness when I had no energy left to string any words together. And about one day, about 7 months before I was finally diagnosed, there was what I would call a shift or a turning point. As I said, I was still desperately trying to connect with God and to reach out to him in ways I had before. And so I was reading through the Bible, and I ended up in the book of Jeremiah in the Old Testament. And a verse just literally leapt off the page. I don't know if you know what I meant by that, but I read it, and I just knew in that moment that God wanted me to read it and to see it. And I knew that he wanted to get my attention with it, and he wanted to speak to me through it. And the words are from Jeremiah chapter 30 and 17. You can see them on the screen. And it says, "I will give you back your health and heal your wounds, says the Lord. I will give you back your health and heal your wounds." These are God's words through the prophet Jeremiah to the nation of Israel. But they ministered deeply to my broken heart. And they are also, and were also, God's promise to me in my current situation. And in those moments, along with the verse, God also gave me a picture in my mind and something for me to visually hold on to. And it was very simply of him tenderly and carefully and expertly cleaning a wound on my skin and then beginning to very slowly and carefully and tenderly stitch it back up. And even today, I can still see that picture in my mind. And you know, I'd love to say that God gave me that promise from his word and that picture in my mind, and that was that. I was healed instantly, ready to go. But that didn't happen. It took another 6 or 7 months before I was diagnosed. And honestly, during that time, my physical and my emotional and my mental health got worse. But in all of it, I tried to hold on really tight to what I knew God had said to me in that verse. And yet, on many days when the darkness and despair was really thick around me and life was very fragile, even that was stretched to its limit. And you know, even after diagnosis, healing, health and restoration has taken a long time. I am 3 years post-diagnosis, but my recovery has been a journey. And I'll be honest, it still is a journey. Because here's the thing, I believe that God can and God does heal in miraculous and instantaneous ways. And probably if I'd have had a say, that's what I would have picked for me. In fact, who am I kidding? That's absolutely what I would have picked for me. I was desperate for where I was to end. But for me, healing has been a process. And in that process, God has been and he is still at work. Because finally being diagnosed by a GP, and then I guess understanding and accepting that I was ill with maternal depression and anxiety, took time. It took time for me to accept that that's where I'd been and that's what was wrong with me. And then to understand that. All of that was the crucial first step of God's promise of healing, of giving me back my health and healing my wounds. And with that, alongside that, he has been at work gently restoring me back to life and to health through medication, as I mentioned, which I was on for a significant time and took me time to come off and to learn how to live without, through the love and care and support of others, through talking therapy and psychiatrists and psychologists, through my little son, Ruben, and through my husband, Gavin, and the rest of my wider family. But here's the truth. Had I been given the choice, I would have opted for the instantaneous. Heal me now, Lord. Let's get it over and done with. But that isn't what God had for me. Because in reality, that's not really how recovery from mental illness works. You don't normally just wake up one day and everything is normal or sorted or fixed or over. And make no mistake, this season has been very traumatic and very painful. And the road has been very long and dark. There were days I wasn't sure if I would make it out alive. And this, to be completely honest, is not a path I would willingly have followed. So I'm glad that I did not know that it was ahead for me and for us. But I believe that God did. And I don't know why this journey had to be mine. And we still don't know for sure why some mums struggle the way I have and others don't. And I'm often very sad when I think of how much the illness robbed me of in those first 2 years, especially where my little son and my husband are concerned. Yet, from all of this, and in all of this, God has been at work, and God is at work. As a child at church, we learned memory verses by heart or by rote. Maybe some of you experienced that as well. And as frustrating as that was at times to do, actually it's been a real blessing because I still remember many of them today. And one of those verses that we learned back then was a verse in Romans, Romans 8 and 28. And we know that God causes everything to work together for the good of those who love God and are called according to his purpose. Which I think is easy enough to repeat when you've learnt it by heart. But it can be very difficult to believe, and even more difficult to declare, when everything that it talks about is pain, trauma, suffering, heartache, or loss. And as I look around the room tonight, I'm guessing that I'm looking at others too who have suffered pain, trauma, heartache, or loss. And so you probably know as well how hard it is to see or to find anything good in the midst of it. In the midst of mental illness, I couldn't find anything good. But as I've recovered, God has been true to his promise and to that promise that he gave me. Because from the mess, from the trauma, from the heartache, God has been able to rescue good. And actually, he's also given me a gift. And that gift is, have you seen that girl? Which has very much been part of his healing process for me. Because through the work that I do with Have You Seen That Girl, I came to realise and to accept that 10 to 20% of mums and some dads struggle in a similar way to what I did and what I have. And you know, that really helped. It helped to challenge that mantra that I told myself that this was just me, that this was somehow my fault. It helped to dampen those voices of blame and shame. It helped me to shake off some of the stigma. But it also fired in me a determination to reach out to others with a message of, you know what, you are not alone. And this season that you're going through at the minute does not define you. And you can recover. Have You Seen That Girl is a voluntary website, it's a blog and a movement, which started very simply from me sharing a few blog posts and documenting my story of how I had been with the illness. And from that very early small beginning, which I intended to be a few weeks long blog post, and that will be me, has grown, developed and spiraled in ways that I would never have been able to imagine. It keeps me incredibly busy. In fact, not a week goes by without an invitation to do something or to be somewhere like I am here with you this evening. The website contains links to lots of information for anybody else who's struggling in a similar way to I did, and how to find support with local services and organisations, particularly in Northern Ireland, but all across the UK. And also how to support somebody who might be struggling, be that your wife, your husband, your partner, your daughter, your son, your niece. And I guess it brings community around an issue that sometimes can be very hidden or there can be a lot of silence about. It's a movement because lots of other parents have actually joined it. I wasn't expecting that, but lots of other mums and dads have begun to share their stories. Some have also begun to fundraise. Some have organised events in their local community to reach out to families who might be struggling or might be hurting with the message of, you're not alone. Let us help you. This does not define you. You can recover. And we're all in this together. And Have You Seen That Girl has also provided me with an opportunity to raise awareness in a wider scale, again in ways I couldn't have imagined. A couple of years ago, I was invited to give a TED Talk on the story of where I've been. I campaign and I speak at conferences in the UK. I speak in Stormont. I work in Westminster. And I lead a campaign called the Everyone's Business Campaign to see mums here in Northern Ireland get access to the specialist services that they desperately need and deserve. And then to support all of this, Have You Seen That Girl has developed Bags of Hope, a reminder for parents on the longest, on the hardest, or on the darkest of days, there is always light, hope, friendship, and community. These bags have been developed specifically for parents who are struggling. And so inside each of them, you find a candle, a reminder that even on the darkest day, there is light and hope. There's a colouring book and some pencils. Adult colouring is actually now a thing. I don't know if any of you are into it. I quite enjoy colouring, but it's very good actually if you enjoy it to take a bit of time for yourself. There's some chocolate and sweets, because who doesn't need a bit of a sugar rush? And there's some herbal tea bags. And as well as that, then there's lots of information with links to events and services local to the mum or the dad, so they know where to find help and community. And, you know, these are where 95% of the fundraising that we do for Have You Seen That Girl goes. And since they were launched in 2016, over 3,000 have gone out all over Northern Ireland to mums and dads who are struggling and who need to know that they are not alone. And in order to get them into the hands of parents, I partnered with lots of different groups and organisations, which in turn helps to build community around the issue and helps, again, to break a bit of that stigma and the silence that can surround it. But here's the really special thing for me about all of this. I could never have imagined to write this where I am right now for myself, but God could. And God has. In truth, Have You Seen That Girl and all that I do at the minute doesn't actually belong to me. It's God's. This is his gift of good, rescued from darkness and despair that I found myself in. And you know, during that season, I have learned so much more about God and about me and God. But I'm still learning. My faith is still being rebuilt and it's still being restored. And as I'm recovering, there's so much more to God that I probably would not have known or experienced had I not been where I was a few years ago. I don't know how I find you this evening. You've heard some of my story, but I don't know yours. And perhaps as you've listened, you can see similarities with mine. And maybe you can't. I've shared about faith and knowing God personally. And that might be something that you can relate to. On the other hand, as you sit here tonight, you might not have any interest in God at all. Or like I did, you might feel that you're almost at the end of faith, ready to let go and to walk away. I don't know what season of life you're facing. You could be in the midst of something really difficult that you feel is never going to end, that just can't be resolved, or something that could possibly destroy you before it does. Or maybe you're coming out the end of a difficult season, but you're finding it hard to piece together and make sense of where you've been. You could be struggling privately or publicly with depression, anxiety, work stress, family issues, a relationship breakdown, debt or money worries, health concerns, or future plans. Or maybe as you sit there here this evening, despite being out and about, despite chatting and smiling and enjoying lovely treats of food, maybe you feel alone, hurt, lost, disappointed, angry, forgotten, or insignificant. And here's the thing, while I don't know where you're at this evening, I know the one who does. Because tonight, God sees you. God knows you. You are not in insignificant. You're not just another face in the crowd, another bum on the seat. You're not forgotten. You're not useless or hopeless or what any other negative emotion that plays over in your head. And God is also aware of exactly where you're at, of the circumstances and of the situation that you find yourself in right now, even if nobody else sitting in this room is. God knows. And you know, he is big enough and he is strong enough to walk with you through this season and to carry you if that's what you need him to do. That's what he wants to do for you this evening. And you know, even though as you sit here this evening, you might have no idea how good or hope or healing can ever come from where you're at or where you have been, even though you might doubt that it can or that will, God can still do that in your life if you ask him to. I've come to realize over the last few years that people of faith, very much including myself, can often be and have often been guilty of being glib or sharing cliches when we talk about dark or difficult seasons, maybe offering platitudes or quick verses rather than really engaging in the mess and the hurt and the pain. And that's not what I want to do this evening. I hope you can hear and you have heard from my story that it's not where I've been and it's certainly not what I believe. But I do believe that wherever you are in life, God is for you. You've listened to me talk very personally about me and about my story. But tonight, as I finish, I want to leave you pointed at God and not at me. Because tonight, he is the one who can make all things new, who has plans and purposes for each of us, including you, beyond what we could ask or imagine. Whose ways, whose thoughts, and whose ideas are nothing like we could ever write for ourselves. And he is the one, in fact, he is the only one who can rescue you, who can redeem, who can repair, who can restore, and who can renew wherever it is that you find yourself tonight. That is his promise to all of us. That is his promise to you.